Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's 4 o'clock on Grant and Danny. On the Fan in D.C. and in Richmond. Always appreciate everybody checking us out, being a part of the show. Hopefully the family growing larger and larger as we are in week two here in drive time. Appreciate you guys making this show part of your routine. Means a lot. Beltway Blitz every day at 4. The teams in town you care the most about. We jam three of them into one segment, so we got intel coming your way. On the Nationals, we just picked up John Lester. And on the Capitals, we play the Penguins for the second time in three games. We will get to those two items in just a moment, but let's start off on the gridiron. Rick Snyder, columnist, thefandc.com. Snyder remarks, Marty Herney, like you, used to write at the Washington Times before becoming a PR person for the Washington football team and eventually a general manager in Carolina. He's expected to be the new GM here in D.C. Do you know him personally? How well do you know him?
Oh, yeah. You know, I started out with Marty. Met him during my job interview at the Times. They said I was going to replace Marty on horses. He was going to go to the Redskins. And, you know, he was a good mentor for me for the 3 years we were together. Taught me a lot, you know, about things. I think what you're going to see, if Marty does indeed come, you're going to see somebody that's sort of like Casserly. Doesn't say very much, doesn't lie about anything, but doesn't really elaborate. He's kind of close to the vest. He's so close to the vest that Marty ended up dating the sports copy editor, this lady, and none of us knew about it until they announced their engagement. Now think about that. No one knew about that in the office. That's how tight-lipped Marty can be.
So he's good at secrecy. Is he a good general manager, Rick? I don't know that his record is particularly exemplary over the last decade plus, but tell us, how do you think he'll do in this job?
Well, he's very good at things like the salary cap. He's good at teamwork and managing parts of people. You know, his drafts have been up and down. He's had some hits and some misses, like a lot of people. I think his role here won't be as expansive as it was in Carolina. They have more people, I think, doing less things, you know, be good at what you do. So I think, you know, the GM title, it's not like the Casserly title, for instance. I don't think it's all-encompassing like that.
Rick, how do you feel overall about how dominant the Panthers' presence is that Rivera's brought in? By my count, it's a dozen assistant coaches, the training staff, and now three front office people, including the GM and the person that runs the salary cap.
Well, the NFL is a small world, and this happens all the time. I mean, when Norv came, I remember, among other things, I think there were seven Cowboys players back when people really hated the rivalry more than now. People hated all these Cowboy players coming, but coaches always bring people that they're comfortable with because, hey, their jobs depend on that too. And it's a buddy-buddy system. It's heartbreaking in the NFL. So we've seen this before. Carolina was a good organization overall, so I don't have any real problems with this.
Rick, do you care about Kyle Smith and about how it's just kind of weird that he doesn't get considered, doesn't get an interview, but someone that reports to him does, and it doesn't seem to be much care or concern that he might be one of these up-and-coming executives that leaves Washington and does well somewhere else and causes Washington fans a lot of pain?
Well, we've seen it before. I mean, I don't have a personal relationship with Kyle, so whatever, you know. But, you know, he's good at what he does, but lots of people get forced out of jobs like this in the NFL. It happens all the time. So he'll find another job, I'm sure of that. And I'm sure he'll be successful wherever he goes.
Rick, what's your blueprint for the quarterback position going ahead this offseason?
Well, if you know, if I could just throw money at it, I'd go for Deshaun Watson, try and spend whatever I could to get him. Because you need a quarterback. I wrote that on the fans' website this week. You need a quarterback more than anything. And look at the playoffs right now. Those four guys show you that point. So you got to go find out. If you can't get Deshaun, which you probably can't, I don't really like anybody in the free agency world. So maybe you draft. Do you go for, like, Tasker in Florida? I mean, you're not going to get the top guys. So maybe there's a couple guys, you know, the Georgia quarterback maybe, you know, Tasker, Tennessee. There's some guys there that could do something. Take them. You got to also ask Alex, what are you doing? I think Alex wants to come back when all is said and done. So I bring Alex back, too, to start. You know, maybe you finish. You know. It's going to be a weird year. I know everybody wants to say, well, you want an NFC East. You got to grow and be better. Sometimes you got to take a step back, too. The quarterback decision is everything for the offseason.
Rick, thank you, buddy. Always enjoy the time, man.
All right, guys. See you.
We'll talk soon. How about some Nationals, please? Rich Rowley, for right now, the second covers the Nationals for The Athletic, but congratulations are in order. I know you're getting a big, big, big promotion, so that's very cool, Britt. But while we still have you about the Nats, tell us about the John Lester deal. Good move, bad move, or just a move that was made?
I think it's a good move because, you know, there's that old saying that there's never a bad one-year deal, and I think that's the case here, where the Nationals needed starting pitching depth. And obviously, Lester isn't in the prime of his career anymore, right? But you kind of know what you're going to get. He fits the clubhouse veteran type of guy that we know Mike Rizzo really likes. And there's plenty of incentives built in for him to hit certain milestones. So to me, I like this deal. I think what it does and what I really like is it pushes down the rest of those guys where you now have three guys, Joe Ross, Eric Fetty, Austin Voth, fighting for one spot, not two. And to me, that's just huge. It just seems like overall, this makes them a stronger starting pitching type of club.
Britt Giroli is a national MLB writer for The Athletic. Totally agree with you, and it's what I like about the deal as well. I guess where I am a little bit frustrated still, when you bring in a 37-year-old who's maybe on the last year or so of his career, is like there are teams trading for Joe Musgrove. You know, that's a guy that could help a lot. Like, is there not an urgency? Do they just not have interest in spending? I mean, you're seeing the Mets surpass them, in my opinion, in the division. They've got a window here where they can still compete, and it doesn't seem like their interest in doing so matches mine. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. So I think when you look at some of the trades that are being made, you look at the Padres, the Nationals don't have a single top 100 prospect. So they actually can't make some of these moves unless they get the okay, and I doubt Rizzo has the okay to go over that luxury tax, right? You look at this team and this club and how it's set up, they can't make these big moves. They can't afford to pay Corey Kluber $11 million at the expense of some of the other holes they have to fill. To me, I like this move. I'd like it even more if they figured out a way to trade for a third baseman and really upgrade there. I think then you're like really excited and you've made some significant moves. But to me, they're hampered by that farm system and what they're able to do. And we know they don't want to trade Cade Cavalli, Jackson Rutledge. These are their top two guys. We know that the stock is down on Carter Kieboom, so he's not a guy that you can flip for a big league name anymore without offering other people. So I think they're kind of in a tough spot here, Grant, where they don't necessarily have all these funds to spend, especially with some of the moves they've already made. Then they also don't have the capital to trade away. So they are trying, but it's not super sexy, and it kind of doesn't look like they're all in, even though I think they are because of where they're at. To me, there's still work to be done. You still have to add a third baseman, maybe a couple relievers as well. But to me, it was as good as it was going to get. I would love for them to go get Trevor Bauer or Jake Odorizzi. I just don't see that happening the way this team is set up, the way the money is already attributed to so many guys.
So, Britt, this is going to be a bad analogy, but bear with me, okay? I force my poor wife to watch so much sports, and she gets sick of it. I don't like most of her shows that she likes. So where we meet in the middle is HGTV. I love HGTV. We can all get along, right? There's a show called Love It or List It, and the people that are fixing their house to sell it potentially have a certain amount of budget. And if something comes in under budget, they get to spend more money in a different spot. This is kind of the same way of asking the same thing. What it feels like is happening to me.
What is going on here, Danny?
They say I'm going somewhere with it. They save money on Josh Bell.
I'm about to buy a home, so I'm really into this show too.
Oh, it's so good. They save money on Josh Bell. They save money on Kyle Schwarber. They're saving money everywhere. but when are they actually using it? Because to me, I'm looking at it, it depends on where you look. They're 15, 20 million bucks below the competitive balance threshold. They've got more room to spend, and they're just choosing not to make the house nicer.
Well, here's the thing, though. What if they get Chris Bryant? What if they assume some of that salary? What if they get Contreras to fill their catching hole? Well, I think also they have to have some money to play with at the trade deadline, because if they get to July and they're in it and they're like, oops, we're out of money, we're all going to be crushing them, right? Like, oh, my God, this team can't make an upgrade. They're one arm away or whatever. So they're never going to go right up to that right now. You know, and I do think when you say where is the money, you look at this rotation, that's where the money is. I mean, I think what they're paying Strasburg, Corbin, and Scherzer alone is more than some team's actual, like, payroll. Mm-hmm. So that's where the money is, and that's where they've kind of gotten themselves into this situation. To me, the biggest issues are the cheap guys, you know, the Victor Robleses and the Carter Kibums. Those guys haven't really paid off. So you're looking at upgrading, like, everywhere, and you can't afford to be doing that. Not on the free agent market, certainly.
Britt Giroli, national writer, covering baseball for The Athletic. Congratulations again on that opportunity.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Hopefully you'll still call me. I'll still answer.
We will, absolutely. We can get some intel on the rest of baseball. Follow Britt in The Athletic. Let's talk some hockey. Her colleague at The Athletic is Tariq El-Bashir, and I'm not sure anybody in town does a better job covering the Capitals, so it's great to have him back on the show. Tariq, why don't we just start with these three games and five out of a possible 6 points garnered. How do you feel about Peter Laviolette's first 180 minutes he's coached?
I think there's a lot to like there. As you said, I mean, 5 out of 6 points when you're starting with 4 straight games on the road, not too shabby. You know, before last night's game, they were actually in first place in the NHL. You never want to get upset with going 2-0-1, but there certainly are some warts and some things that they're going to have to address. Number one is they're still giving up too many goals. Number two, Ilya Samsonov hasn't looked, super. He's looked okay. And there are just some small things that I think they're going to want to get corrected, but they're off to a strong start.
Tariq, they didn't play last night, but I still think they took 3 minor penalties. What the hell's going on with the penalties? Will this ever change? Will it get fixed? I know it's early. Blah, 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 blah. The penalties, man. The penalties.
Penalties are really frustrating for everyone involved. They're frustrating for the fans at home watching. They're frustrating for the players on the bench like Alex Ovechkin and Evgeny Kuznetsov, who, when penalties are taken, that means they're not going to go out on the ice. They don't kill penalties. So it's actually not really good from a strategic standpoint to take that many penalties and keep some of your best players on the bench. That said, I was doing some research this morning, guys. You know what? Good teams sometimes take a lot of penalties. You know why? They play really, really hard. Back in 2017-18, of course, that was the year the Capitals won the Stanley Cup. They had the 7th most minor penalties in the league. Number one that year, Peter Laviolette's National Predators, who happened to win the whole President's Trophy. So, last year the Capitals won a 5th straight division title, also leading the league in minor penalties. It's something I'm really kind of struggling to reconcile in my head, how you can take so many penalties and still be good. But, I mean, the Boston Bruins are regularly one of the most penalized teams in the league. It just seems to kind of happen when you're a big, aggressive team. As long as your penalty killing is good, I think they're going to be in an okay spot. But I would say over the course of the year, you don't want to be the worst at something. So, maybe they can dial it back just a tad.
Tariq, Penguins, 2nd time in 3 days. I'm pumped up about all of these little mini series that are going to be played against rivals like this, because maybe it's going to get frisky. What do you think?
I think you're right. We haven't really seen it yet. And they play those first 2 games in Buffalo. And look, the Sabres aren't really part of the division, so there's not a whole lot of rivalry there. Part of the Metro Division. So the Penguins, a whole other story. As you know, these two teams do not like each other. And it's very rare for teams' leaders to come out and say, we do not like each other. And that's the case with the Penguins and the Caps. Do I think there's going to be a lot of fisticuffs tonight? I don't know. These are two teams that know they're going to be battling one another for, the second, third, fourth spot maybe, in the playoffs. coming out of this division. Points are really, really valuable when you're only playing 56 games. I think you're going to see some of the more the rough stuff maybe in the third, fourth, fifth time these teams run into each other, because they're just going to get sick of one another. You know, when you already don't like somebody and then you're forced to see them day after day after day, I do think something might kick off a little bit. But again, I think if you're a coach, you got to tell these guys, hey, you can't take dumb penalties. You don't want Tom Wilson sitting in the box for 5 minutes for fighting someone when he's your first line right wing and he's, you know, tied for second in points on the team. So there's a fine line that's got to be walked there. But I'll tell you, man, I can watch Cap Finland every night.
Yeah, they might get sick of each other, but we will not get sick of you, Tarek. Thank you, buddy.
Anytime, guys.
And Tarek will not get sick of Taco Bell. Tarek loves Taco Bell, and we love Tarek. And so Danny once ate at a Taco Bell, so it's like a circle of love that we have here.
Right, and you're aware of Taco Bell, so everybody's kind of in this in some way.
I do know that it exists. I've never eaten there, and I think you know why. It's because I like burgers and fries and not whatever's at Taco Bell.
Sure.
Not that it's not delicious. I'm sure that it's wonderful. It's just you love it, and it's your thing, and I want you to have it. That's all.
Oh, yeah.
You do have it. You can have it all-nighter, college, or now. Have you had Taco Bell recently, Danny?
It's been a minute, I will tell you. But I every time we talk to Tarek, I honestly think about Taco Bell.
What was your go-to order at Taco Bell?
So what you got to do is the double-decker taco. That's a regular hard taco in the middle. It's sort of basic, and it looks good. It's nice. It's clean. It's crisp. Then you get the layer of refried beans and then the soft taco outer shell. So you get double the carbohydrates there. That's number one. I'm a chalupa guy. I am a gordita crunch guy. I am a nacho supreme guy. It's a nice side dish at the side of chips and cheese and beef and the sour crema and a little bit of the spicy salsa as well. The beef burrito supreme. You basically want to try to spend right around $12. $12 means you're full, you're satiated, and you probably had a nice little tasty beverage to wash this down with. That's usually a job well done.
I have a sauce who's telling me that Jim Mullins, who is touching all the buttons today, that Jim Mullins had Taco Bell last night, as a matter of fact.
Did he really?
Jim.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How much did you spend at Taco Bell last night?
It was about $12, yeah. Uh-huh. Just right about where Danny just suggested.
Best thing that you ate was what?
I got the Nacho Bel Grande, and obviously I get the meal, so that comes with a very large drink. And you also get a crunchy taco supreme, and then I also added on two additional soft tacos. I think that's a solid move there.
Look at you, attaboy, side of soft taco. Now for you, when you get the drink, is that a liter of cola? What are you going to work with?
I actually went with the Dr. Pepper, and it was just purely, you know, their suggestive advertising worked 100% on me, because when I see the picture on the screen of the delicious Nacho Bel Grande, it had a Dr. Pepper next to it, and I said, yep, that's what I want.
Yeah, that's the one.
And I got it. And I also went with the Diablo sauce and the mild sauce, because those are the two that taste the best.
Can I say something that's going to annoy both of you guys?
Go for it.
Never been a big Dr. Pepper guy, ever.
Oh, come on!
It just wasn't me.
Why?
There was a time, a very small time, short time in elementary school, when I got into a habit where I would go to the vending machine after school, before our activity or whatever, and I would get a bag of chips, like crunchy kettle-cooked chips, and I would get Mr. Pibb. And I was in on Mr. Pibb for a short time, but for some reason, I never really got in on Dr. Pepper.
They're cousins, man. They're so close to one another. The formulas are there's like one rogue element off, and other than that, it's the exact same beverage. They're really, really similar.
Here's what's going to really get you guys upset. Never once have I ordered or purchased a Dr. Pepper by choice.
Ugh.
And if I were to open a cooler like at a party or something and it's Dr. Pepper or like a bottle of water, I would go for the water.
Unbelievable.
You okay, Mullins?
The Dr. Pepper disrespect is unbelievable.
I'm so upset.
I knew you were going to be angry. And you know I love soda. Coca-Cola Classic. I still miss it to this second. I miss everything about it. But yeah, just never been a Dr. Pepper guy. At some point, Danny, I want your top five sodas before the end of the show. Maybe we could
do that
in the 6 o'clock hour. I'll give you mine as well. And Dr. Pepper will not be on it. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Next, Chase Young got an honor today. Could be the beginning of many this offseason. And have we seen the end of Robert Griffin in the NFL? Sounds like the Ravens are parting ways with their backup quarterback. That's next. The accolades continue to pour in for rookie sensation Chase Young. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan. Chase Young named the Pro Football Writers Association 2020 NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year today. Continues a trend for Ohio State. How about this, Danny? Joey Bosa, 2016. Marshawn Lattimore, 2017. What on earth happened in 2018? Nick Bosa, 2019. Chase Young, 2020. The fourth time in 5 years that a Buckeye has been named the Defensive Rookie of the Year by the Pro Football Writers Association of America. Pretty amazing. Number two overall pick rode a stat line that included 15 games, 44 tackles, 12.5 in the backfield, 7.5 sacks, 4 forced fumbles, 3 fumble recoveries, 4 pass breakups at the line of scrimmage, and a touchdown this season defensively as he became a team captain on a Washington team that went 7-9 and won the NFC East. An instant sensation, and on top of that today, he was the only rookie named to an all-conference team by the Pro Football Writers of America. He was named to the defensive team on the all-conference selections that they made. So pretty amazing day for Chase Young, who had 42 total pressures, 30 hurries, 6 quarterback hits this season.
Yeah, a fine rookie year, without question. There's nothing to complain about in that regard. A lot of those counting stats, some of the big heroic plays, the game-changing moments, he had all that stuff. Now, again, I've said this. I don't think he would have won this award if you just sort of move this to a different year. There were guys that had better rookie years, whether it's Bradley Chubb, Myles Garrett, or otherwise. But in this year's rookie class, he stood out. I don't think anybody was particularly close. You know, Patrick Queen played on a really good defense, didn't produce anything other than a lot of tackles. And you look at Antoine Winfield, didn't produce some of those interceptions, fumbles, or otherwise. Jeremy Chinn had one incredible game where he had a return for a touchdown, but again, doesn't approach at all what Chase Young did here as a rookie.
An amazing rookie year, the likes of which should give fans hope that he's on that path that we were all kind of penciling in for him. When you had the debates before the season started as a fan base and said, okay, what's success look like? I think all of us thought he was going to get more sacks than 7.5. And most of us said if he doesn't get double digits, and people were saying 13, 14, 12, 10, whatever it was, they'd be disappointed. And, you know, if you would have told me before the year, hey, he's going to have 7.5 sacks, I would have assumed that not only was I disappointed, but I would be a little bit worried or maybe feel like he left, you know, a lot to be desired. But I feel so good about him and where he's at. I feel so great about his prospects moving forward. The way that he hindered offenses, the way that he changed games, you know, particularly in the second half of the season. I think his second half, just in terms of how often we heard his name and saw him making, you know, plays that crippled drives and that ended possessions, it was just more frequent. You know, clearly he was healthier after the groin injury. That helped. But he got really, really comfortable at a position where it can take some time. Didn't have an offseason, didn't have preseason games, and he still was able to go out there and be the most feared player on a defense that finished second in yards, fourth in points, and he's the guy that offensive coordinators are worried about. Pretty incredible. He also finished, I'm not big on the PFF grading, you know this, but it's all information, so it's worth throwing out there. In the end, he finished number one in PFF grades for Washington this season. So that, you know, doesn't have anything to do with the name on the back of his jersey or the number that he wears. They had Montez Sweat second, Jonathan Allen third, I believe Deron Payne fourth, and Ronald Darby fifth. So that kind of meshes with your eyeballs. Maybe you would have thought Kendall Fuller fifth or something like that. But they had, among the guys that qualified and played enough, Young won, and Montez Sweat, who had a really good year, too. But all of those defensive linemen, Allen, Payne, Sweat, they all were better this year. And Young, hopefully, I would think, gets some credit for that.
It deserves some, for sure. I mean, again, a lot of attention was certainly paid to him. I think they actually really missed Matt Ioannidis when it came to the pass rushing. I mean, you look at this group, and Jack Del Rio likes to, but they blitzed more. And, you know, in a lot of cases, a lot of that depends on offenses and game script and different situation. But over 16 games, a lot of things kind of tend to equal out. They were right about the same as last year in terms of sack total. I think Ioannidis pushing in the middle, he's their best interior pass rusher. I think having him around, you might see something pretty amazing next year if he's able to kind of come back in full strength with these two bookends just kind of coming into their own when it comes to that. But, you know, in certain regards with Young, some of these awards that he's getting, again, he should be the defensive rookie of the year. I think that's I kind of filed that away as done and settled science. Some of the Pro Bowl, All-Pro kind of stuff I find interesting, though, when you look at even within the NFC, some of the guys that had unbelievable seasons with regard to sack totals, quarterback hits, constant penetration. You know, for example, Trey Hendrickson in New Orleans, 13 and a half sacks, twice as many quarterback hits as Chase Young. Didn't take anything away from Chase Young, but that's a defensive end on an excellent defense that had a great year that isn't getting much recognition because everyone pays attention to Cameron Jordan. Just interesting how these sorts of things go. Once the momentum starts to leave the station and the guy's making highlight plays and everybody likes him, some of these things kind of come piling in, which is, you know, you don't apologize for that. You accept all those awards. You don't say, no, I don't deserve it because Hassan Reddick, who is an edge rusher, had a better season than me. You collect those awards, get your bonuses, and keep your name out there.
So there's no doubt about the fact that because he's Chase Young, you went second overall and you got the Mercedes-Benz commercials and whatever else you're doing, that you're going to get some of those accolades, and someone's jotting names down. They think, who's that guy from Washington? All right, Chase Young, let's vote for him. I mean, I think someone would be naive not to think that he benefits from some of the hype. He benefits from just having been a superstar at Ohio State, a superstar on draft night. The only thing I'll disagree with when you say, like, Hassan Reddick had a better year, that might be the case. I'd have to go back and watch Hassan Reddick's season to feel confident saying something like that, or Hendrickson, or anybody else for that matter. I know they had more sacks. That doesn't mean they had a better year, though. I'll challenge that. I mean, to me, this is a lot like when we started to have a little bit of a changing on the guard when it comes to of the guard. I think I botched that saying. A changing of the guard when it came to the Cy Young vote. And I remember there was a year where, gosh, I wish I remember who it was. But, like, Felix Hernandez won the Cy Young with a dozen wins or something like that. And there was someone who won, like, 19 games who didn't have nearly as good a year as him. And it was the ultimate, okay, let's see which writers now understand that wins do not equate, like, great pitching performance.
Who pitched the best the most
exactly.
is the award, yeah.
And so that year is still looked back at as kind of like the turning point for the Baseball Writers Association of America analytically. And this is overstated, but I think we're getting to a point where people are realizing whether it's just catches for a wide receiver, let's say, or sacks for a defensive player. Like, there are better ways to do this, whether it's, you know, the numbers are out there now. They can be found. So you might have to pay for websites. Like, I pay for PFF and a couple of other places. You might have to get a subscription to Next Gen Stats. But you can find out the percentage of the time that someone's double-teamed and the percentage of the time that someone wins on a pass rush. And so I'll be curious as we move forward just to see. I think there is going to be a little bit of that, an advancement of kind of how we view a season. I'm not saying that 7.5 sacks should be considered a great year for a pass rusher ever. But if it's 7.5 sacks while attracting a lot of attention and making a ton of plays that change the game, I think it's possible that you had a better year than a guy who had 12 sacks. I would just have to watch his season and see what he did on that defense.
Yeah, I'm not watching tape on Trey Hendrickson. I'm just, you're right, I'm throwing raw numbers out there where, you know, Chase Young was 65th in quarterback hits and 27th in tackles for loss, and there are other guys that appear multiple times in those getting home. And as we know, sacks are fluky. Ryan Kerrigan had a better season when he had 11 sacks than when he had 13.5, according to a lot of ancillary numbers that sort of tell that story that right. you're talking about. Sacks come and go, and they come in bunches, et cetera. But, you know, just sort of looking at that, it's interesting to me is all that, again, and this is all with the understanding that's your defensive rookie of the year. And I think without being a great pass rusher right now, I don't think he has the full toolkit at his disposal. He still ended up making a lot of those game-changing plays. As he learns some moves and counters and sets guys up and starts beating tackles more consistently, I think we're going to see some of those gaudy numbers kind of come his way.
Certain, I agree. But, I worry. Yeah. Well, worry is too strong of a word. That's a head. You know, people make a headline out of that. I don't know that he's ever going to be like just a pure great pass rusher. Follow me for a second. Like, just, and this was off watching him this year. Like, I didn't watch a ton of him at Ohio State. We, you know, did the same thing. You go back, you look at his season, his numbers, and things like that with the Buckeyes. But like, he does not have the quote unquote body type and rush the way a lot of times that, like, your pure pass rushers do. Coming out of the season, I feel like he is a physical freak and specimen with size and strength and speed, you know, the likes of which is going to make him a problem for a long, long time. And I think he's just a problem who happens to play defensive end. Like, you could have a guy at safety, as an example, who's just a a freak and a game changer, but maybe they're not the best coverage person ever. Like, I don't know that he's going to be 15, 16 sack a year, like Myles Garrett type. I think he's maybe a different kind of player. I think the impact is going to be kind of what you saw this year. But I do hope, I'll say this for him. A, he needs to get to a point where he's getting probably 11 or 12 sacks just to feel like, you know, you're making good on what you can do. And B, if he doesn't, then debates like this will go on for a long time. Because not everyone is having conversations with people that are coaching and calling plays against him who are saying, like, yeah, we worried more about him than anyone we've worried about in a month. You know, yeah, we did more to slow him down than we did a week earlier against this guy who's been in four Pro Bowls just based on the film. You know,
Tampa wasn't afraid. I mean, they had Rob Gronkowski block him a couple times. They singled up on him.
They weren't. That's one game.
I know it is, but that's my point. It doesn't tell a whole story, but what I hope we get to a point where you get that irritating cliche when that one play that's supposed to be a quick hitter and they slide the protection to the right on the opposite of whatever, or maybe slide the protection to the left, away from Chase Young and he's on there with a tight end. It's supposed to be a 2-second play, but then the pass gets taken away. And Collinsworth's like, you simply cannot block him with the tight end. That he'll pander on and wax poetic about the idea that you can't possibly ever block a pass rusher with a tight end, even though a million things went into that sack had nothing to do with the tight end. You know the kind of play I'm talking about?
Sure.
Where he'll just over talk about how TJ Watt cannot be blocked by a tight end. Of course he can't, but when the play is designed to be over in 1.4 seconds, you can block anybody with anybody.
I hope tight ends try to block him a lot next year because I like his chances
in those
matchups already.
I prefer
that. Yeah, he's been in the league for one season, and he is a defensive rookie of the year and a Pro Bowler and was named to the Pro Football Writers Association of America's all-defensive team. So we can pick nits and want for more and you know, figure out whether or not he's overrated, I suppose. But bottom line is, so far, so good for Chase Young. You're listening to Grant and Danny on the Fan. I do want to get into this Robert Griffin future in the NFL. We can hit a couple of notes around the league. There's also a couple of candidates that are emerging in some of these openings. The Eagles within the division possibly trying to lure someone away. We'll get to that next as well. The Eagles still working on interviewing coaching candidates. By the way, how wrong was I about that? When they fired Doug Peterson, my take was, you don't fire Doug Peterson unless you already know who your next coach is going to be, unless you've already, behind the scenes, talked to someone and you've got something in place. Even though I think Doug Peterson was immensely overrated and a complete jag and was going to live off the Super Bowl for years and years, and I had a lot less of a problem with moving on from him than a lot of people because I just don't think he's that good of a head coach. I thought, well, they're not going to blow him out a couple years after they won the title unless they really got a big name they're bringing in. It doesn't seem like that was the case at all. It seems like the first step in their plan was, all right, let's fire Doug and then we'll meet and figure it out the next morning. And that's kind of what has happened here. But Kellen Moore is the latest to interview Danny, the offensive coordinator from the Cowboys. Now, that'll get scoffed at, and a lot of people will be mad if he gets hired, and Eric Bieniemy doesn't, or some of these other longtime coordinators with great resumes don't. But remember the track he was on. Last year, the Cowboys' offense under Moore took flight in a way that before Jason Garrett relinquished some of the power to him, it never had. And Dak Prescott went from a game manager type to throwing for almost 5,000 yards and putting up crazy numbers. And then this year, before he got hurt, I mean, he was going to shatter records. He was on his way to leading the league in a bunch of categories. They were scoring almost 40 points a week. When he went down, so did that team, so did that offense. Now, I'm not telling you Kellen Moore should get hired by the Eagles, but the way people think about him right now and when they bring up all his numbers from this year probably won't be fair, because for a year and a half before Dak Prescott got hurt, that offense was humming.
It certainly was. And here's what I care about when it comes to coordinators, coaches, and otherwise, right? We talk about this all the time when it comes to quarterbacks, where a guy that's got unlimited weaponry that puts up big numbers, you go, well, yeah, he should have done that. What happens if you give him league average stuff? Do you get more out of him than the average bear? And when Kellen Moore had weapons and stuff at his disposal, frankly, he did what you should do. He did what you should do. When you've got a quarterback that's good, one of the better running backs in the sport, a great offensive line, great receivers, you put up numbers. And he did that. So he passes the minimum threshold of coordinator goodness, if that makes any sense. The guys that really, really and truly impress me are the ones that make chicken salad out of you-know-what, right? The Kyle Shanahans of the world. That doesn't matter what receiver is healthy that game. they're still going to get 360 yards. They're still going to, you know, score 25, 30 points over the course of a game just by his creativity and design. Those are the guys that always impress me the most. The next tier down, are you above a minimum threshold? I think Kellen Moore's above that threshold.
It is not a coincidence that the two jobs yet to be filled are the Texans and the Eagles. I believe those were the two jobs where there is the most baggage. The Texans gig has only gotten worse, pretty much with every single passing day over the last couple weeks, by the way. I mean, if you start with the Eagles, right, Jalen Hurts, Carson Wentz, what are you doing at quarterback? You probably married to Wentz because of the contract, but you have to fix him because he's completely broken. He needs to be rehabilitated, and you know, he's got his wing clipped, and now he's got to be re-released into the wild, and then are you trying to trade Jalen Hurts? Are they both in the locker room together? I mean, that's a debacle. The GM is under fire and has a heating seat, so you might have a new GM coming in within the next year or so if you don't turn things around because the cap situation's bad. It's going to be really hard to do that. It's just not a great job. So they're going to have a hard time getting a great candidate. But then on the other side, the Texans, where they've interviewed mostly retreads for a reason, I think. Like Jim Caldwell, Marvin Lewis, Leslie Frazier. If those guys don't get the Texans job right now, there's a good chance they're not getting a head coaching job in the next couple years. Those are the types of candidates you might have to hire after Bill O'Brien flew the plane that was that team into the mountain and then went back up into the air and crashed it two more times.
And then, as a solution to that, they turned to this guy named Jack Easterby. If you haven't, by the way, there are plenty of stories written. There's a great one. I want to say it was written by SI, just this thorough deep dive profile into this guy's story. It's unbelievable. I asked Mike Florio when he was on late last week about that story, GP. Florio just threw his normal amount of haymakers about how unqualified for that job that he is. A guy that started off as a team chaplain and sort of wellness person is now running their football operation and, you know, handed things over to Nick Caserio, and they're ticking off Deshaun Watson and everything else. But that Texans job is a mess. A, because of the mess that O'Brien left, giving him all that autonomy and power. Turns out it was a mistake. And then B, who they tabbed to clean it up. It sounds like the cure is almost just as bad as the initial disease there that was, you know, O'Brien's control. But, you're right. It can't possibly be a coincidence that these other vacancies have filled. Even Detroit filled its vacancy. That dead-end Detroit that's got not much prospect for anything, to be honest with you. They're like, yeah, we'll just go with this hat-on-a-hat guy so we can fire him in a couple years.
All right, here's a question. Let's play hot take or not. Hot or not. Hotornot.com. Remember that?
Of course I do.
All right. Hot or not, teacher, red pepper, ratemyprofessor.com. All right, is this take hot? So I believe that while the Texans absolutely should have discussed with Deshaun Watson, their franchise quarterback, what their offseason plan was, I think it's a little bit overblown that they're like the bad guy here because they didn't do what Watson wanted. Like, this is not another sport where your point guard runs your team. I think that the quarterback should be counseled, but like Tom Brady's no longer in New England and was essentially 20 years in, still treated like employee number 53. So when Deshaun Watson's angry because he didn't get a say in who their GM was going to be, and when he's frustrated because he picked handpicked a coach to interview and they didn't interview him, I understand the frustration. I think it's way overblown to act like they completely wronged him. That's pretty weird to me, that no one's stopping and going, well, is that the type of power that a quarterback should have? I mean, I understand the logic, and if I'm running an organization, for the record, if Deshaun Watson is my quarterback, I would go to him, and I would say, hey, Deshaun, here's what we're thinking, just keeping you abreast of everything. But if he started telling me, okay, I want you to interview this GM and this head coach, maybe I'll get around to it. But, like, you're the quarterback. That your job is to be the quarterback. Like, this is my job. It's the scene from Knocked Up. Like, that room in there where the baby's getting born, that's my room. The room over there with the vending machine in the waiting room, that's your room. Like, I'm going to help deliver this baby because that's my girlfriend in there. You're her sister. You go into the waiting room. I don't know, man. Hot take or not a hot take?
Not a hot take. It may be viewed as such. But now, if Deshaun Watson, as an interested party, as an observer, is going, hey, this process stinks, you can have a correct opinion about that. Right? As I do. I think they have executed a terrible process since turning the keys over to Bill O'Brien.
Right.
Everything they've done has been incorrect at every level of the organization. All wrong. at all times wrong. If Deshaun Watson is making that observation, that's a correct observation. But this idea, and I don't know if we're borrowing from the NBA, I don't know if you know this is applicable to other sports, the idea that an ownership group or a GM or whomever should go, hey, Deshaun, come into my office. Here are some GM candidates we're thinking about. Here's some pro scouts we're thinking about. Here's the new flavor of soda we're going to put in the vending machine. Give me your input. We didn't do that, so that's a slight. I mean,
But that's the report, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he wants to be traded. It's not that he wants to be traded necessarily because they've just been bad with Bill O'Brien for a few years. It's that he feels, and I don't know what's real and what isn't, but this is kind of what's out there. He is offended, essentially, that he gave them these suggestions that they didn't then execute in their search for the GM or the head coach, and they went in a different direction.
Right. See, that I don't care about.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry your butt hurt. But at a certain point in time, by your own free will, that pen was in your right hand, and you signed Deshaun Watson on all the places where they put the little yellow X's, the little sticky notes to sign. Nobody forced you to do so. When you sign, you are also, you're entering into, A, an agreement, but B, your eyes are wide open. You could go anywhere and do anything. If you read the tea leaves and said, hey, this probably isn't trending in the right direction, you'd have been right. But you need to be held just as accountable for signing with this.
And look
dumb
at the precedent,
team.
Danny. I mean, you think Aaron Rodgers has a ton of say on what's going on in Green Bay? They hired LaFleur, and he's going, who's this guy that's younger than me? You know, they drafted a quarterback in the first round this year, and he's furious about it. Like, he's not making picks. And that guy is a future Hall of Famer and one of the three best quarterbacks who's ever lived. Tom Brady left New England this past offseason largely because he was annoyed that at some point he felt like, maybe dad should treat me a little bit different. Like Deshaun Watson, awesome, top five guy in the league probably, one of my favorite players to watch. You've been here for 6 minutes. Like, those guys don't even have what you're talking about, where they don't have say in the GM and the head coach. They're not picking those people. We can get back into this in a little bit. 5 at 5 is next on Grant and Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.